The setting for our talk today is the Massachusetts Military Reservation, located in beautiful Cape Cod, Massachusetts. We sometimes refer to it as 22,000 acres surrounded by reality. Massachusetts Military Reservation consists of Otis Air Force Base in the southern part and the Camp Edwards in the north, and also a Coast Guard station located somewhere in the middle. Massachusetts Military Reservation is a CERCLA site or Superfund site, primarily due to the contamination of groundwater from military activities. We have groundwater plumes in the southern part of the base, primarily consisting of solvents and fuels. We have contamination in the northern part of the base, where we have a number of training ranges that go from small arms to heavy artillery, and the plumes in this portion of the base consist primarily of explosives and propellants. One of the things that's really interesting about the Massachusetts Military Reservation is the number of groundwater monitoring wells. We have close to 2,000 or more, and sometimes refer to MMR as the Great Porcupine. Now, these monitoring wells were placed there to monitor the groundwater contamination. And one of the questions that I'm posing right now is whether or not we were successful in capturing the variation of the contamination in these groundwater plumes, and whether or not we're capturing other things within the capturing other variables, capturing other processes within the data. We're going to be focusing in this particular area here. This is the L range. And the L range is a grenade launching. It was formerly an infiltration range, now and more recently is a grenade launching range. We have a series of firing points located here on the southeast and a series of targets located down gradient. And one of the characteristics of the L range is we have groundwater contamination that seems to be emanating from the L range, somewhat low concentration, sporadic, but groundwater plumes consisting of perchlorate and RDX and HMX that seem to be due to some of the earlier range activities. The range is located in the Mashpee Pitted Plain, which is a glacial outwash plain. Consists of about 300 feet of glacial outwash, situated between the Buzzards Bay Moraine and the Sandwich Moraine. Within this 300 feet of glacial outwash, we have an aquifer, which is unconfined, and about 200 feet thick. The eastern plumes of the L Range commingle with another spill. We have a fuel spill 12, which was a pipeline leak located just down gradient of the L range, is believed to have leaked about 70,000 gallons of aviation fuel, and that in turn provided a medium for which some of these plumes move into and affect the chemistry of the plume. We're primarily concerned with RDX. We believe that RDX is part of the explosive package of the 30-millimeter grenades that were used on the L range, and the RDX is distributed across the site as explosive particles, primarily from low-order detonation. And based on the distribution coefficients, these particles are fairly soluble and fairly transmissive. Soil setting, this is a typical soil in the area. Cape Cod, we have a thin layer of luss over glacial outwash, a bit of minimal soil development. We have a development of an albic horizon with some spodic formation in the subsoil. This particular profile ranges from 76 to 93% sand, mostly the coarse sand fraction. And sea soil simulations that we performed on this particular profile, we estimated a little over a year for transport of RDX and TNT through the entire 1 meter profile. So for the objectives, we were trying to figure out whether or not we had these groundwater wells that were used to characterize these RDX lobes emanating from the L range. And these RDX lobes are intersecting with this anoxic area, which we find in association with the FS-12 fuel plume, where we have the fuels being broken down by biological agents and reducing the amount of oxygen and increasing the specific conductivity in that portion of the aquifer. So we looked at groundwater samples analyzed 425 samples from 42 groundwater monitoring locations collected over about a 10-year period. We collected both fixed and screening samples and analyzed for explosives, propellants, metals, and field parameters, converted non-detect data to half the detection limit, and we used a correlation and factor analyses to try and understand the variability within the groundwater network. Summary statistics, we see that the RDX is relatively dilute, non-detect to 9.2 micrograms per liter, but is a little bit elevated in comparison to the action level of 2. A couple other things to point out, pHs range from 4 to 7, and DO ranges from 0 to about 16. In other words, goes from anoxic to supersaturated in this groundwater network. So for the correlation analysis, we used a non-parametric Spearman rank correlation procedure and looked at intervariable comparisons and looked at parameters, primarily explosives, propellants, metals, YSI parameters, and location parameters, which include elevation, easting, and northing. And we found that RDX was significantly positively correlated with perchlorate and HMX. We believe that was probably due to similar depositional regimes, similar depositional processes, highly correlated with dissolved oxygen and oxidation reduction potential, negatively correlated with temperature, specific conductivity, easting, and northing. And this is primarily due to the fact that the lower oxygen or the anoxic portions of the aquifer are to the east of the study area, and the northing represents what we believe to be attenuation, basically source depletion and movement of the material down gradient, because the flow direction is basically almost due north-south. So for the factor analysis, we just took all of the variables and basically threw them into one great big pile to see whether or not we could elucidate any other interesting relationships. We calculated the eigenvectors, did a Varimax rotation to maximize the variability, and we did not do any variable estimation, so it left us with a representation of about 48 samples, or about 10% of the original data set that was used in the multivariate analysis. We divided our after we calculated our factor scores, we looked at the location of the various wells, and we set up four basic groups in order to try and figure out what was going on within the aquifer. We have this eastern group, or what we call RDX dominant. We have the western group here, which includes this lobe and this lobe, which was primarily perchlorate dominant. We have a small central area here, which had measurable concentrations of HMX. And then we also had a non-plume feature. With the factor analysis, we were able to come up with at least four significant factors, and that is, according to Manley, any eigenvalue that's greater than 1 can be considered significant. And with that, we capture about 75% of the variability of all the parameters within this groundwater monitoring network. One of the cool things about factor analysis is once you come up with a factor, you get to name it. So for the first factor, we have a positive loading with DO, negative loading with specific conductivity and easting. I call this an oxic-anoxic factor. And the second factor was pH and turbidity. And we've seen in other places on the MMR where we have increasing levels of pH, increasing turbidity. We call this a biological factor because we believe this has something to do with the biological activity going on within that fuel spill. Third factor was a perchlorate factor. Fourth factor was an RDX factor coupled with elevation. So we take these factor scores and we plot them out in a multidimensional space. And we see that there is some segregation of these various groups. We have this brown area, which is the eastern group. The pink area is the western group or the perchlorate dominate. The blue area is the central or the HMX dominate. And the green is the non-plume. And we see the first factor loaded across the y-axis. I've also included the vectors here. The length of the arrow and the direction is both based on the factor scores, and the magnitude is the longer the arrow, the stronger the relationship. So what we see is with the eastern dominant, we see that these samples are plotting to the left with the greater easting and higher specific conductivity, and away from the DO factor, which is pointing to the right. So basically in this quadrant, or in this half, we have samples more to the east, higher specific conductivity, lower DOs, and this just the opposite, located west, lower specific conductivities, higher DOs. Along the y-axis, we have our biological factor, which might indicate that some of these samples might be more prone to biological activity. We see some partitioning here of the non-plume in the direction of higher pHs and higher turbidity, as well as a brown outlier. And one of the complicating factors with pH is not only do we have elevated pHs within the anoxic zone, but we also have a pH gradient from shallow to deep due to potential acid rain contamination. Our third factor was a perchlorate factor, and we see where we have some, with the exception of this outlier here, we have some movement of this distribution in the direction of the perchlorate, and this is where the perchlorate, these wells are where the perchlorate is detected. Also note on this particular bar, everything to the left of the bar has RDX concentrations that have been non-detected since 2002. To the right of the bar is RDX that has been detected after 2002. And so for the fourth factor, which was our RDX elevation factor, we see increasing levels of RDX here with decreasing elevation. And this is particularly fascinating when we take a look at the conceptual site model, where we have distribution of particles across the surface, which dissolve, move into the groundwater aquifer, and basically move unimpeded, so to speak, until it intercepts this low DO, this remnant fuel spill. And within this particular range, we see degradation of RDX. As we go deeper in the profile, we find that HMX and RDX persists as long as it remains underneath that anoxic plume. So in conclusion, we were able to elucidate a few interesting factors, but probably it seemed that the important thing to remember was that the geochemistry of the aquifer is what was driving the variability, and that our factors 1 and 2 account for 44% of the variability within that data set. The factors 3 and 4, significant. It meant that we were capturing the variability that we intended to within contaminants, but it was secondary compared to the geochemical nature of the aquifer. Why is this important? Because a lot of groundwater modeling does not take into account some of these geophysical or geochemical parameters. And in this particular case, if you don't take into account those parameters, you're going to overestimate your groundwater mass. You might overestimate your remediation times or work on a wrong remediation strategy. So acknowledge the Army Environmental Command and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And this presentation was a culmination of two papers. Links are here. The papers can be downloaded if you need any further information.
I might have used your background information. Your number one factor negative is easting and SPC. Can you explain that a little bit?
It was basically, there's a concentration gradient. going from west to east. In west, you have the more oxygenated portion of the aquifer. You have higher DOs. You have lower specific conductivities. In the east, and this is regarding the study area, you have low DOs, high specific conductivities, low ORPs, that sort of thing. So it was that concentration. Basically, the analysis was saying it was that concentration gradient going from west to east that was causing, that was the most important factor in defining the variability within that study area.
What was that flume was flowing from west to east?
No, the flow is from north to south. And that's why the northing was interesting, because the northing is where the source was. Sources from the north flow south. So in the north, we started seeing attenuation. In other words, there was a negative loading with northing and RDX, which meant that the source was depleting, but the mass that had migrated into the groundwater was continuing to move down gradient.
So the east part was lower conductivity. It was just natural.
Yes, it was basically a victim of circumstance. It was all basically due to that fuel spill. It was that fuel spill that was providing that impetus to create those geochemical conditions where you get the variability.
It was because of that spill that the eastern part had lower.
Yes.
Any more questions? No. Thank you.